I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. As U.S. President Donald Trump reiterated the need to put an end to the war in Ukraine, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he'd be willing to step down to achieve peace. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias has details.
Monday marks the third anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and the stakes to bring the conflict to an end are high, President Trump stressed once more when addressing the Conservative Political Action Conference on Saturday.
But it's got to end. It's a horrible, horrible thing to watch. I'm dealing with President Zelensky. I'm dealing with President Putin.
Trump also referenced the deal in the works that would grant the U.S. rights to access Ukrainian natural resources in return for the military aid America has given to Kyiv to fight the war.
I want them to give us something for all of the money that we put up.
During a forum in Kyiv on Sunday, President Zelensky expressed readiness to continue the dialogue with the U.S. as a partner and hinted he'd be willing to step aside for the sake of peace.
If to achieve peace you really need me to give up my post, I'm ready. I can trade it for NATO if there are such conditions.
Veronica Valderas-Iglesias, VOA News.
The leaders of France and Britain are making visits to Washington this week. It's part of European efforts to persuade President Trump not to abandon Ukraine in pursuit of a peace deal in the three-year-old war with Russia. Both leaders maintain that Ukraine must not be sidelined in peace talks. Macron is due at the White House on Monday and Starmer on Thursday. This is VOA News. The Vatican says Pope Francis remains in critical condition and blood tests show early kidney failure, but adds he remains alert. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
At Sunday Mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York, Cardinal Timothy Dolan prayed for him.
Our Holy Father, Pope Francis, is in very, very fragile health and probably close to death. As we pray with and for him.
And the Archbishop of New York says.
In a world that seems driven for money and accumulation, he urges simplicity of life and savors the company of the poor.
Outside the Pope's hospital in Rome, the faithful are also praying. The Vatican says the 88-year-old is still receiving high flows of oxygen and blood transfusions. I'm Julie Walker.
Projections show Germany's conservative opposition won Sunday's election. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
German opposition leader Friedrich Merz has claimed victory in Sunday's election for German chancellor, and incumbent Olaf Scholz has conceded defeat for his center-left Social Democrats, calling the loss a bitter election result. Voting happened 7 months earlier than originally planned, after Scholz's unpopular coalition collapsed in November, 3 years into his term. Meanwhile, the far-right party, Alternative for Germany, nearly doubled its support, which was the strongest showing for a far-right party since World War II. I'm Donna Warder.
Israeli tanks have moved into the occupied West Bank for the first time in decades in what Palestinian authorities call a dangerous escalation. The tanks rolled in on Sunday shortly after the defense minister said troops will remain for a year in parts of the territory and that tens of thousands of Palestinians who fled cannot return. Israel launched the offensive in the West Bank 2 days after the current ceasefire in Gaza took hold. American Airlines says one of its flights from New York to the Indian capital, New Delhi, landed safely in Rome on Sunday afternoon after it was diverted due to a security concern, which later proved to be non-credible. The airline said Flight 292 was inspected by law enforcement after landing at Leonardo da Vinci International Airport and cleared to redepart. It didn't clarify the cause of the security concern, but added an inspection was required by protocol before the flight could land in New Delhi. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, VOANews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, February 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Security Council calls for an immediate ceasefire and withdrawal of Rwandan troops from DRC.
Rwanda takes note of the resolution, but we believe that the UN Security Council and the international community as a whole should support the regional efforts.
DRC President Felix Tshisekedi wants to have discussions to form a national unity government. We'll have a reaction. Black History Month is being celebrated across the United States. Pro-democracy and human rights groups call for trial of a former Nigerian military leader, Babangida. Zambian President reshuffles his cabinet with an eye on 2026 elections.
First of all, the president has a right to reposition and position himself for 2026 because he is in a democratic competition. Who wouldn't want to position themselves to win an election?
And President Donald Trump presses for an end to Russia-Ukraine war, while Ukrainian President Zelensky is willing to step down in exchange for peace. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations Security Council on Friday called on Rwanda's military to stop supporting the M23 rebels in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and the return of all captured territory without preconditions. Kigali denies the allegations that it is behind the rebels. The call comes as the M23 continues to capture more land and appoint parallel governments. Moses Yabria Rimana reports.
Last Friday, the United Nations Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution that called on M23 rebel group to immediately cease hostilities and withdraw from Goma and Bukavu. It follows the application of sanctions by the U.S. on Rwanda's Minister of State for Regional Integration, James Kabarebe, and the spokesperson of the M23 and the Congo River Alliance, Lawrence Kanyuka. The U.S. envoy to the United Nations, Dorothy Shea, says that the sanctions were meant to bring Rwanda to dialogue.
These actions underscore our intent to promote accountability for key officials who enable Rwanda's and M23's destabilizing activities and continued impunity for human rights abuses in eastern DRC. We must speak and, more importantly, act in a united manner if we are to advance solutions to this crisis.
The conflict in the eastern DRC has so far led to the deaths of more than 3,000 people. Rwanda's Foreign Affairs Minister Olivier Nduhungirehe says that his country has taken note of the UN Security Resolution and the dialogue with all parties concerned, including the M23 rebel groups, should be supported.
Rwanda takes note of the resolution, but we believe that the UN Security Council and the international community as a whole should support the regional efforts to try to solve the conflict in Eastern DRC instead of undermining them. So there is a process, a regional process that is ongoing, and we call on the UN Security Council, on the major Western powers, to support that process.
The conflict has seen an exodus fleeing to neighboring Burundi. According to the Burundian government, more than 35,000 DRC citizens have been registered since the beginning of this month, including DRC's police. Zeno Mukongo Ngaye is the DRC's envoy to the United Nations.
L'invasion par les forces de défense du Rwanda, RDF.
He says that the invasion of the Rwandan army and their supporters, the M23 and AFC rebel groups, was brutal and violated the country's sovereignty. He says that the Security Council resolution should be implemented as soon as possible. Rwanda, on the other hand, denies that it is backing either rebel group. A political science professor at the University of Kinshasa, Dr. Nkere Ntanda, says that external support would not help the DRC if the government cannot resolve its internal issues.
The solution lies in the hands of the DRC. There is no external decision, resolution, or even military force that will deliver the DRC from this quagmire.
The East African Community and the South African Development Community's Chief of Defense Force are expected to meet this Monday in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. For many, the question remains whether the government of the DRC will sit at the same table with the M23 rebel group, which Rwanda says is the root cause of the crisis. Moses Habyarimana for VOA Africa.
Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi says he will hold discussions to form a unity government. The Associated Press reports the president made the call during a meeting of the ruling coalition. He gave no details on when and how. Elmer Demian Kawira is the president of the new popular coalition government in exile. He tells me that it is a little too late for President Tshisekedi to call for a unity government when he should have done so 2 years ago.
It was 2 years ago. We told Tshisekedi to put the shadow cabinet for the war against Rwanda. Now he waited 2 years for said that he is ready for this union government. We think it's very, very late. Now we need first to take control of every city and localities that is under control of terrorist army from Rwanda.
The international community has been saying that President Tshisekedi should talk to M23 and talk to everybody. Are you saying you're not willing to talk to him?
We think that we cannot talk with M23 because there is not M23. There is the Rwandan army. Maybe the international community, especially U.S., must ask to Paul Kagame to withdraw all his troops from Congolese territory for respecting the sovereignty of Congo and Congolese independence. And now we think that the only solution we are going to propose is to make, like in the Second World War, the National Council of Popular Resistance, which will allow us to put out a Rwandan occupation out of Congo.
But in order to put up a national resistance, you need a centralized government. I think that's what President Tshisekedi is calling for, to come together and form a centralized government.
How will we do this when we know that the Rwandan army after Goma and Bukavu is progressing for Kalemie? This will be Katanga, former Shaba region, and then it will be Kinshasa. Then it will be not the answer for stopping this occupation. And you know that the U.S. and international community knows that today, former president of GRC, Joseph Kabila, said that he's behind the M23. It means that there is a coalition or association, Kabila and Kagame, against Congolese sovereignty. The only solution must be, first of all, Kagame must withdraw from Congo all the Rwandan troops. That's the first. And the second, Kabila must know that since 18 years he was president, he didn't do anything. He didn't build any army to protect Congo. And then we can accept the message of President Tshisekedi that calls us to be on the same table for one union government.
Emery Demie Kawira is the president of the Congolese Coalition for Transition. He was speaking with us from Libreville, Gabon. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, February 24. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Zambia's information minister says the ruling United Party for National Development, also known as UPND, will win next year's general elections. Cornelius Mwitwa says the party's only concern now is the development of the country. This after President Hakainde Hichilema carried out a reshuffle of his government over the weekend. Critics said he did so to cover up his government's poor performance over the last 4 years. Information Minister Mwitwa tells me the reshuffle is for the good of all Zambians.
It is not really a massive reshuffle.
It is a normal reshuffle, and the president now has worked with us as ministers, with his permanent secretaries, 3 years, that now he has understood who is who can do what, who can perform where, for the service of the good of our people. So it is now time for him to make those reshuffles. You agree with me that after halftime, the coach, most coaches, is a time when they can make changes to the team. That's when they can do substitutes in the game, and it's time to change, to infuse new blood, to infuse new energy, to realign.
So what do you say to your critics who say the president is just trying to reposition himself for the 2026 election?
First of all, the president has a right to reposition and position himself for 2026 because he is in a democratic competition. Who wouldn't want to position themselves to win an election? So positioning himself to win an election is perfectly in order. But the reshuffle has nothing to do with to align people in accordance with what he thinks, you know, right, that those people are able to deliver for the service of our people. I can now say with confidence that 2026 is a done deal. President HH has it in his bag. We will make sure he wins, not by hook or crook, no, because the people of Zambia have said so. They are happy. They always be naysayers. They always be doomsayers. And doomsayers and naysayers, sometimes they speak louder. They are not the majority. They are in the minority. 2026 is in the bag. Right now, our concern is not politics. It's development for our people.
Is it fair to say, because the opposition has criticized your government of trying to suppress the opposition ahead of these elections?
You know what? I'll tell you this, my brother, and this is a fact. There are always sensational stories that come out of Africa. The stories that sell to the international media is that there is chaos in Africa. There is chaos in Zambia. There is no such chaos. There is no oppression. There is no suppression whatsoever. I think that in terms of democracy, right now, Zambia is even better than many countries out there that posture themselves as being democratic, yet they oppress their citizens. This I can tell you. We are a supermodel that even America can even learn something about us, because we coexist as opposition and ruling party and as citizens and with diversity of origin, living harmoniously without discrimination, without any one of those feeling more superior to others or inferior. Nothing.
Cornelius Mwitwa is Zambia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. Pro-democracy and human rights groups in Nigeria are calling for the trial of former military strongman General Ibrahim Babangida. This after he admitted in his memoir that the controversial election of June 12, 1993 was won by businessman Moshu Abiola. Abiola died in custody after declaring himself president, sparking countrywide riots that killed dozens. Frank Taitai is the director of Citizens Advocacy for Social and Economic Rights. He tells VOA's Chinedu Ofor that the probability that Babangida will face the law is remote.
It's something that may never happen, but it may be sweet to the ears of some persons who thought that Babangida was responsible for annulling the elections that were thought to be the freest and fairest in the history of Nigeria, that dashed the hopes of very many people, especially those who belong to the civil rights movement, the pro-democracy activists, who thought that Nigeria missed a golden opportunity in its history to become a stable democracy. Today, Nigeria is teetering with a lot of problems associated with bad governance and a democracy that is considered to be unstable because political players are able to manipulate the system against the will of the people.
You said it's unlikely that a former military head of state will ever stand trial. Is it as a result of no crime was committed, or that the present civilian government has no stomach to bring the issue before a court?
First, it is unknown to Nigerian law that that a military leader would be tried for actions that he took while in office. It has not happened in Nigeria's history before. Two, nobody, whether in government or out of government, would ever have the courage to determine whether or not former military president Ibrahim Babangida should be put on trial. Nobody, not this president, and very unlikely any other president. And that is to also consider the very powerful influence that the man still wields today in Nigerian politics and in the Nigerian military. So it's something that is literally unthinkable. And then the third element is that there are no express provisions in the Nigerian law that will try a former military president and the acts that they have carried out while they were in office.
Frank Taitai is the Director of Citizens Advocacy for Social and Economic Rights. He was speaking from Abuja with viewers Jinidu Ofor. As U.S. President Donald Trump reiterated the need to put an end to the war in Ukraine, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he would be willing to step down to achieve peace. Viewers Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Monday marks the third anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and the stakes to bring the conflict to an end are high, U.S. President Donald Trump stressed once more when addressing the Conservative Political Action Conference on Saturday.
It's got to end. It's a horrible, horrible thing to watch. I'm dealing with President Zelensky. I'm dealing with President Putin.
Trump also referenced the deal in the works that would grant the U.S. rights to access Ukrainian natural resources in return for the military aid America has given to Kyiv to fight the war.
I want them to give us something for all of the money that we put up. So we're asking for rare earth and oil, anything we can get.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky should work with the Trump administration, especially with respect to economic cooperation, said Republican Representative Mike Lawler when interviewed Sunday on ABC's This Week show.
The United States has invested hundreds of billions of dollars to support Ukraine. And when this war is finally over, Ukraine is going to need significant investment to rebuild.
During a forum in Kyiv on Sunday, President Zelensky expressed readiness to continue the dialogue with the U.S. as a partner and hinted he'd be willing to step aside for the sake of peace.
If you achieve peace, you really need me to give up my post. I'm ready. I can trade it for NATO if there are such conditions.
Democratic Senator Jack Reed told ABC the U.S. should work closely with both the Russian and the Ukrainian leadership in the peace negotiations, but he anticipates some challenges ahead.
And my sense is that the recriminations by the Russians against Ukrainians after this settlement, if it happens, will be dire indeed, that they will deliberately hunt down and destroy anyone they think is was a opponent of them.
Meanwhile, in Russia, President Vladimir Putin participated in ceremonies marking Defender of the Fatherland Day Sunday. He also handed out medals to soldiers fighting in Ukraine and pledged to keep supporting his troops with new and modern weapons and equipment. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
The Vatican said on Sunday that Pope Francis' condition remains critical. The Argentina-born pontiff is alert and continues to receive high-flow oxygen through a nasal medical device. Meanwhile, Christians around the world are praying for the 88-year-old's recovery. Monsignor Matthew Odong is the vicar of the Archdiocese of Gulu in Uganda. He tells me that the Catholic faithful in Uganda are also offering prayers for Pope Francis.
We, as the Archdiocese of Gulu, are offering prayers to God for the total recovery of Pope Francis. As the Archdiocese of Gulu in northern Uganda, we are praying for peace in the world according to the requests and intentions of Pope Francis, especially for the restoration of peace in those countries being torn apart by conflicts. Especially we pray for peace in Gaza, peace in Ukraine, even in Russia, and many other countries. Thirdly, we are praying for the conversion of the world back to God. We believe that most of these conflicts, hatred, division that take place in the world today, it is because humanity is tending to be very far away from God. I am Monsignor Matthew Dong, Archdiocese of Gulu, Northern Uganda.
Of the Archdiocese of Gulu in Northern Uganda. Focus here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with basketball. As Senegal finished the 2025 AfroBasket qualifiers unbeaten in six games, and much of their success was down to their exceptional ability to dominate the boards. On Sunday, Senegal defeated Cameroon 83-76 in overtime to finish top of Group C. And although Senegal overcame a spirited Cameroonian side who fought back from 17 points down, it was their dominance of the paint that separated the two sides. In the other game played on Sunday, Rwanda clinched the last ticket to the AfroBasket 2025 by beating Gabon 81-71 in Rabat. On Sunday, Gabon needed to beat Rwanda by 28 points or more to secure their last qualifying spot in their group, but Rwanda weren't about to return home without a ticket to Angola 2025. In table tennis news, Nigeria's sole representatives in the 2025 ITTF African Club Championships, the Kenyan Queens of Calabar, have fought their way into the semifinals of the women's event in Tunisia. Eight teams from Tunisia, Egypt, Algeria, Ethiopia, and Madagascar are competing in the women's event, with Egypt's Zamalek aiming to defend their 2024 title. In the men's category, nine teams from Egypt, Algeria, Ethiopia, Tunisia, Madagascar, Congo DR, and Cote d'Ivoire are vying for honors, with Egypt's NP as the defending champions. The Somali Football Federation has opened its second youth football development center in the port city of Kismayo, making another significant milestone within the matter of a week. Kismayo, some 500 kilometers south of Mogadishu, is the capital of the Jubaland state and the city well known for its football. Somali Football Federation Senior Vice President Ahmed Takal, who inaugurated the launch of the new center, said such centers will contribute to the country's football development. And now to golf, where South Africa's Jack Kruijswijk has won his first DP World Tour title following his victory at the 2025 Magical Kenya Open at the Mutiaga Golf Course in Nairobi. The South African shot a 4 under 67 to finish 18 under for the tournament and two strokes clear of second place John Parry. The 32-year-old Kruijswijk completed a weekend birdie free and carded four birdies in the final round. He earned $425,000 for his victory at the tournament. And on to cycling, where Belgian rider Aldo Tailleau claimed the prologue that opened the Tour du Rwanda 2025 on Sunday, February the 23rd. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. That's it for this Monday, February 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.